from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Impact Catalyst. I'm Karen Chasson, Executive Director of the St. Petersburg Foundation. My guest today is Dr. Nasheed Madjuan. He is the Executive Director of Florida Humanities. We're going to learn a lot about this organization today, how he ended up in this new role for him as of May, I believe,
yes.
2021.
Yes.
Tell us about the relationship of Florida Humanities to the National Endowment of the Humanities. I know there's a connection.
Right.
Tell us how that works structurally.
Yes. So in the 1960s, the Johnson administration on the federal level enacted the National Act for Arts and Humanities, 1965. And with that act, the federal government saw fit to bring forth an understanding of ourselves and how we interact in our community, learning about our neighbors, their religion, culture, cuisine, all of those wonderful slice of life stories that make this nation what it is. But in doing so, there was an obstacle. How do we reach into the state? How do we reach into the communities and neighborhoods and workplaces to bring forth those good stories? And the National Endowment for the Humanities learned very quickly that the states and the cities and municipalities knew more about their neighborhoods than they could. So they carved out a portion of their appropriation and divvied up to 501c3s across 56 states and territories. And Florida is one of the top five. Right now, because of the census and the population, we're top three as far as the size of the appropriations we receive. And what we do with that is re-grant. We re-grant and provide direct programming. And what I mean by re-grant, we run competitive grant rounds. So 501c3s or nonprofit organizations across the 67 counties can apply to us through a variety of grant rounds specific to themes or organizational types and budget size to do good in our communities. Those programs are range from lectures, podcasts, exhibitions with programming, and some of the initiatives can address civic engagement and dialogue or festivals, book festivals. So at the surface level, that's what we're about, but there are a lot of other partnerships that we can explore.
Do you provide direct programming yourselves, or do you do the majority of your work through nonprofits in the communities?
It's a mixed bag. Uh-huh. Sometimes we partner with organizations. On the horizon, there are some other grant-making organizations that say they are able to give $5,000 grants in some counties that, that are... One good example would be the Winter Park Health Foundation. That's an organization that closes a gap in the disparity of understanding about health initiatives and homelessness and diabetes or what have you. And one of our pillars is public health education and understanding. And so if we partner with them to do grant making, then their $5,000 to say, 15 to 30 organizations can grow to $10,000 to 60 organizations.
So you leverage the resources of other philanthropies
So,
in the community.
Yeah, and that's one of the direct programming opportunities. English for Families is an organization, is a program that allows us to support the literacy and growth for individuals that have English as a second language. So we partner with libraries across the state of Florida to bring forth that good program. Another good activity that emerged from a very successful program with Village Square in the North Florida area. This is an organization that takes sensitive topics of discourse about racism, conflict, and bring scholars and individuals together to make sense of it, so that you can take it back into your household and have a good discourse and dialogue.
Interesting.
So their series of programs has been so successful over the past decade or so that we saw fit to partner with them directly. And we have a multi-year working relationship with them, Democracy Reimagined and Reignited. We're bringing authors and politicians and journalists to the stage, virtually and in person, to talk about tough topics. Also, the changing world. One of the issues that I found that was very interesting was the social media age that we live in and how we receive our information, what we see is authentic and real and supported, and the gap between what is amateur journalism and what we see is something that we can distribute and disseminate as the truth and primary evidence that backs it. So.
Interesting. And I'd like to talk a little bit about your background. Your journey to appreciation and deep engagement with the humanities is kind of interesting. You started out studying history.
Yes.
And working in archives and museums. Yes. Tell me about your kind of scholarly trajectory, because I found it interesting.
Well, I am from a small town in Arkansas along the Mississippi River, Helena, Arkansas. And I was fortunate to come across its unique history that addressed music and history, the geography of the land and how the environment and the humanities meet. Okay, so when I went to college, I realized that a lot of that history was missed on me in the classroom. I changed my major from business to history and started to learn more about African-American art, agricultural history in the region I lived in. And I had the opportunity to become a museum director early in my career. The Stax Museum of American Soul Music was the first major museum I directed, but also the Texas State History Museum and the African-American Art Museum at Hampton University, and more recently, the Florida A&M University's Black Archives Research Center and Museum. And these different disciplines afforded me the opportunity to see that when we identify a culture, an ethnic group, it is more than just the general label. We need to find a way or need to be objective enough to dive in and reach in and learn more about that group. You know, we say African-American art, that's not just one genre. There is abstract surrealism, there are the collages, and there are even ways we can take the art and teach math and geometry and interdisciplinary means. And when I came to Florida Humanities, I saw that, you know, here's an opportunity to take that background and open the door to understanding the cultures across the 76 counties of Florida. You know, we have an amazing history of cross-cultural influences of music, cuisine, religion, navigation, expeditions that we take for granted, I believe. And hopefully through the use of our Forum Magazine, which is an award-winning periodical, our direct programming and grant making, we can share with the world what Florida has to offer.
I found it very interesting that at a certain juncture, you went back to school to study creative writing to really polish your storytelling. And then you weren't finished. then you got a doctorate in nonprofit management.
Yes.
Do I have that right? So you bring a really fascinating, you know, kind of 360 degree background to this role, which I think we're lucky to have you here in our state now.
Yeah, thank you.
It feels like we're living in a moment where the humanities are sometimes given short shrift relative to technology and business. I think that there was even conversation in the legislature about which college majors were valid, which ones had meaning and worth. I think I'd love to hear you talk about why the humanities matter to the quality of our culture and our economy.
Well, so when we define humanities, we are actually taking a look, we are crafting a lens into the understanding of humanity, how we live. And how we live is a picture through that lens of individuality. And so in our workplace environment, we navigate the day in one manner. But at home, we may navigate the day in a completely different manner. And of course, sometimes in homes, we we have individual compromises as well. Religion, understanding of literature, history, background. So all of these confluences and partnerships make every neighborhood unique, right? And as we start to expand into some type of macrocosm, Florida becomes just as unique, one of the largest states in the union. And people visit Florida for serenity. People visit Florida for the diversity. So that's your economic layer. But while we live and thrive here, it is important that we understand the special circumstances of our neighbor, what makes them enjoy our neighborhood, and that can reflect on us. And we can understand and appreciate why we enjoy and why we appreciate our atmosphere. But you know, you mentioned some of the challenges that we may have with the legislature. And, you know, there is always an important step we must take when we come across these challenges. We need to, if we can, look at both sides. Well, facing history can be difficult in these sensitive times and with sensitive topics. We tend to take a very linear approach from our perspectives and say, my perspective is the only one that matters. I need to listen to you. I need to find out, you know, what hurts your feelings, what makes you happy, what makes you cry, what makes you craft a story to tell your child, or the stories you want to share from your grandparents to your child, you know, the experiences during World War I or II or just in your neighborhood. And not all of those stories are pretty, but all of those stories need to be preserved and promoted and shared. And that's what we do at Florida Humanities. We try to do that, and we will continue to do that in an objective manner. But we can't do that if we are afraid to approach sensitive topics. We need to have honest discourse. We need to have honest dialogue. And we need to, if possible, provide it in a public atmosphere so that people are comfortable tackling these topics. That way, issues like racism, or if people say critical race theory, issues like conflicts in religion, mm-hmm. or the cultural connections with religion, they're no longer taboo. We can approach those.
Sometimes I think that being forced to make a strong case for the work you do and for the humanities can actually strengthen the position that you're in.
Right. So imagine a family member that is faced with Alzheimer's, and you know, they're in their 60s or 70s, and you have not had an opportunity to record the triumphs that they encountered during the 60s or 70s, you know. But if we teach our children to be objective now, if we learn now how to capture stories, we can collect oral histories and present documentaries and exhibitions and avoid some of the lost stories, like our family members that can no longer tell their story. And these stories can be captured and collected and presented. If you have the chance to go to the website of Florida Humanities, you will find a broad database of magazine articles and videos connected with YouTube that goes back decades. But if we are not funded annually and supported with private donations, then there are some areas of Florida that we would have to pass on until next year, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if everyone comes together and continue to support us, then we can find mechanisms and ways to partner with organizations like I mentioned earlier, or in St. Petersburg, like Studio 620 and Woodson, you know, some of these wonderful organizations that are trying to capture the culture and present it. We can partner with them in a broader way and preserve this great culture we have.
Give me a couple of examples of how you work with youth. Mm-hmm. What are some of the programs that are designed to help them become observers and storytellers?
Well, I mentioned English for Families earlier. That's one of the literacy programs that we partner with libraries to help close the gap in languages. We also provide opportunities through partners to teach youth how to conduct oral histories, graduate students to do primary research on projects. The best thing that we can do is to provide an avenue for nonprofits to apply for some of our grants and conduct or provide opportunities for exhibitions. Exhibitions or lectures, public discourse. Those types of activities are open to the public, and youth and adults and families can share and participate together.
What is the scale of your grant making on a yearly basis?
It's interesting. Well, I will tell you, this year and last year has been very interesting for us. The pandemic, shut the doors to a lot of organizations, or threatened to shut the doors to a lot of organizations. Fortunately, the NEH and the Biden administration, and the Trump administration as well, saw fit to enact legislation to provide support through the NEH down to the councils. And we received $875,000 last year and $2 million this year to provide general operating support to a lot of organizations around the state. 126 organizations received grants ranging from $5,000 to $25,000 this year, and 100 organizations received around the same range up to about $20,000 last year. Now, that's general operating support. That's keeping the lights on. That's paying salaries, you know, those types of things. But we also annually distribute close to $700,000 through the programs I mentioned earlier, Broadcasting Hope, Greater Good, Community Projects, and those grants range anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000. So it depends on the type of work you do, the initiatives that you have. We can support continuous activities or special initiatives.
That issue of operating support is so crucial. If there's one thing I hope can happen in the nonprofit sector and for donors to understand, is that operating revenue is essential, and overhead is not a dirty word. To be a sustainable organization, you need money flowing to your operation.
Right. Well, consider the challenges of the past 2 years. If you're an organization that the curator or the program coordinator is also the bathroom attendant, the ticket taker, the gardener, and you depend on turnstile, admission, revenue, to pay part of your salary or keep the lights on. Well, you know, for the right reasons, doors need to be shut, or we are protecting ourselves and our loved ones because of the COVID-19 spread and its variants. But during that time, you cannot receive admission dollars.
Sure.
Right? So 1 month passed, 2 months passed, and now we're looking at close to 2 years now where some organizations were not able to receive that revenue. Well, our American Rescue Plan grant was allowed us to save a lot of organizations, a few of which were in this area. Yes. So, Karen, since 1973, Florida Humanities has had the wonderful opportunity to distribute $16.1 million to wonderful nonprofits across the 67 counties of Florida. I do remember one data point earlier. I mentioned the American Rescue Plan. $1.88 million that we gave out this year to 126 nonprofits. That's actually 129 nonprofits. And that was, as I mentioned, a very special program. It allowed the nonprofits to really, not only stay open, but look at sustainability. You know, nonprofits during this post-recession age really have a challenge in finding a way to remain relevant, generate funds, gather donations, and make an impact. And one of the things we do is to find a way to meet them where they are. Now, some of these nonprofits really struggle to identify speakers and experts in their field, whether they're biologists or cartographers or philosophers or authors. We have a wonderful program called Florida Talks. And we look across the United States and Florida for experts in a variety of fields that are comfortable speaking to gatherings in person or virtually. And this curated atmosphere is made available to nonprofits as they apply for support for speaker fees or technical support. And they can bring these experts into their communities on a stage so that maybe there are youth that need to interact, as we talked about earlier, or just to provide lectures. That program can be accessed through our website. There you also find a wonderful series of tours through Florida Stores. Now, that's an app you can download or access to use GPS technology and navigate right now just on 40 locations throughout the state of Florida. And over the coming years, we look to add sites throughout the state. And you come across these remarkable points of architecture and art, oral histories and videos that it gives you the opportunity to visit a location if you weren't able to during the pandemic, or you're looking to visit sometime in the near future.
Those are two really impressive programs. Yeah. I love how you're really getting out there directly to families, individuals with the tours, and to nonprofits. Virtually in any community can have world-class speakers address their, membership or just general population. That's very cool.
Yeah, about 3 months ago, late September, we had the opportunity to invite Dr. Danielle Allen in a virtual atmosphere in partnership with Village Square. And we discussed the nature of the Declaration of Independence and democracy and the social contract and how we as citizens should understand our role and our relationship with the government. That is an example of how a world-class ethicist, Harvard scholar, could find their way to the general public in Florida. And we can discuss, remarkable topics in a comfortable atmosphere. And some of these topics we have yet to identify. That means you and your friends and community members and neighbors need to engage us. Let us know what you want to hear.
Oh, that's exciting. So I like what I'm hearing about giving accessibility to small and medium-sized communities to world-class resources that, might not be locally available. Tell us more about that.
Well, so imagine some exhibit that you saw and when you were visiting Washington, D.C., that you thought would be great for kids in your neighborhood to see. An exhibit that was at the American Jazz Museum in Kansas City or the Houston Photography Museum. And, the iconic stories and images and dialogues and public programs that occur around the United States or the world would be great in Florida. But some of these small communities do not have the resources to pay a rental fee from $12,000 to $30,000, or pay the travel fees, or the repackaging fees. All those behind the scenes element go into hosting the exhibition, let alone the public programming that has to occur with that. Now, public programming invites students and families and school teachers to those exhibitions and engage them in lectures and public activities, of course, but one of the things we've done with a museum on Main Street is one of the programs and other exhibitions in relationship with the Smithsonian. We've been able to identify exhibitions that are thought-provoking, are relevant, and contract them so that we can send them around to some of these small museums and provide grant-making support to those organizations and nonprofits in those areas. Their responsibility at that point is to provide a venue for the exhibition, but also craft programming that's relevant to the exhibition, but also relevant to the community. So waterways is a general topic that could span ocean to ocean. But we know that in our communities, there are streams and the 900 lakes and streams and waterways throughout Florida. There's something relevant to our community. And these types of program allows national exhibitions and programs to be relevant to small, mid-sized communities.
I like that. Let's wrap up with a couple final questions. What would you like people to know about how they can support Florida Humanities? And then second, what do you see your priorities for 2022 being? Mm-hmm. Hopefully post-pandemic, but tell us where you're headed in the next year.
Well, in an ideal environment, post-pandemic, we would have a calendar of events that showcases the wonderful activities and public-facing programs of partners and grantees we have across the 67 counties of Florida. But currently, a lot of the programs are virtual. So we invite everyone, students and classrooms and curious citizens, to log on to some of the virtual events that we have. Also, you can become an annual subscriber to Forum Magazine and our membership program that's on the horizon. And you will begin to see the arts and crafts that we've curated for sale through our retail shop, special articles on cuisine and recipes that, you know, have been tucked away in grandma's attic for years, coming to life. And we are also looking at inspiration. Some of our great thinkers and leaders are finding a way to talk about, you know, what has inspired them, what has motivated them. So we are going to continue to provide that in public programs, but also through our Forum Magazine. We're very excited about some of the wonderful elements on the horizon.
So it sounds almost like a Florida-focused Smithsonian magazine and membership kind of combo.
Yes, that's exciting.
Good for you.
Yes, the Florida Humanities is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that serves the common good of Florida. So the organization belongs to Floridians. So we want to make sure that we provide good, direct access, swift access to programs, and we hear from you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Nasheed Mayuan.
Yes.
Really appreciate learning more about your organization, and best of luck in your new role.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
From stpcatalyst.com. From stpcatalyst.com.